So, seems like everyone is here. So, I am Randy and I'm a PhD student from Dr. Fitzy's lab. So, today I'm going to talk about literature databases and using Edo. So, I know this is the last session and you are eager to go home or do other stuff. So, we'll make it fun and interesting. So, I talked to a couple of guys here. So, can I give you a name and
my name is Danger, and I'm from UAH in Huntsville.
Thomas, and we're from UAH.
Oh, that's nice. And
Flora, also from
Huntsville. People from above. So, let's start our session. So, what is scientific literature? Okay. So, this is like a thing I got from a book. It says it comprises scholarly publications that report original empirical and theoretical work in natural and social sciences, yada yada yada, and often abbreviated as literature. So this is not Shakespearean literature. This is today we are going to talk about the things we do, scientists do. So then we have. Yeah, so I like history, so let's talk about history a little bit. So Babylonians recorded astronomical events like lunar eclipses like a long time ago in clay tablets. If you go to Smithsonian or some kind of other museum, they are still preserved, you can see them. And Galileo Galilei, we coined him as the father of observable astronomy. He found Jupiter and rings of Saturn, and lucky for us, he took some paper and wrote it down everything, right? And then come Isaac Newton, and he wrote a book in 1600 called, I tried to read this, Philosophiae Naturalis Principia Mathematica. So, does anyone know where Isaac Newton is originally from? In cases?
France.
Those? But it's just across the ocean.
Do you have a question?
No, I was asking, do you guys know where Isaac Newton was from, his birth country?
England?
Yeah. He's from England. So it's ironical that he used Latin to write his book. I don't know why. But all the things we hate in maths came in this book. I don't know if you guys hear what I'm saying. So all the three Newton laws came in this book, and there's a 100-year gap between Galileo Galilei and Isaac Newton, and this writing down scientific stuff and scientific literature became very prominent after these events.
So let's talk about types of literature.
So I have listed a few things here.
Primary research articles. So primary research articles are standard scientific articles. I'm pretty sure you have read a lot of scientific articles by now from different journals. And these are mostly published in peer-reviewed journals. Peer-reviewed journal, that means some people in your area read them and criticized them and reviewed them, and so that's why we call it peer-reviewed. And these articles contains how the research is done, material and methods, and results section, and what the results mean. Normally that comes in the discussion section. Then comes review articles.
So these are same as normal journal articles, but there are a few differences as well. So these are also published in peer review articles, but they are mainly focusing on a field or area rather than reporting new research. So a group of people can find highly important few papers in that area
and they can summarize it into a one chunk of paper. Okay, so and this is a great source of finding where that field is going. Then comes editorials, opinions, commentaries, and perspective. So these articles express authors' view on particular issues. So it can be a science policy, it can be about maybe how to write grants, environmental issues. So they typically write what they think about a certain area or a
certain field.
Then comes news. So we all know about news, right? So anything related to science which comes in a magazine or newspaper, now there are social media, Twitter. So any kind of science related news can be fit into this category. Then comes blogs. How many of you have blogs or thinking about writing a blog? Okay. See? Yeah. So, I mean, now scientists can blog about their daily research, their meetings with their students or peers, and maybe science policies again, and life in general about their work. And now they can, I have seen people video record what they are doing in the lab and posting it in the blog. Now you have cell phones, GoPro, and all sorts of things. So people actually do these things nowadays. Then comes technical reports. These contain sometimes classified information, because most of the time these are generated by government agencies and NGOs. They have sometimes experiments related to maybe things that they don't want to declare to
public. Then comes field trips.
How many of you have been into a field trip and wrote a report on that? I think almost everyone here has done it, right? So this is the most famous one, but scientifically this is more famous in geology or nature related things. So they write some articles and prominently, I think you may all know about National Geography magazine, and there's a TV channel also. So they write stuff in those magazines, and quite frankly, I enjoyed field trips a lot when I was underway.
It was a lot of fun. So, then comes dissertation and thesis.
How many of you are thinking to go to graduate school and get a master's or a PhD? One, two, three.
I'm in graduate school.
Oh, perfect. So you know. Yeah. So this is the final product that results from a PhD or a master's program. This is often like very long, maybe contain 100 or 150 pages. And they are in great detail what you did over 5 years or 2 years course when you are getting the PhD or master's. And if you go to the library, you can find these dissertation and theses. But most probably they are not accessible through online. So we don't consider it as peer-reviewed articles, since it's mostly covered by your committee. Committee members.
Yeah. So this is a very poor diagram, but I hope it will explain the thing I want to say.
So actually, the scientific literature is a site, okay? And this area is little gray. I'll tell you why. So if you want to do a research, I mean undergraduate research or graduate research. First thing you need to do is you have to select a topic which relates to the science community or for the sake of all humanity. So to select a after you select in the topic, you are going to the lab or computer, you do actual research, right? And after some point, you do informal communication with maybe your advisor, maybe your colleagues, lab mates, and you discuss. I did this today and I'm not getting the results, or I got this result, and what do you think about this and that? So I think we all do that, right? And then comes conference proceedings. So after you complete certain amount of research in your topic, you go to a conference, you have a bigger audience, you talk to your peers, talk to the people who are working on the same research area, and you share your views, and then maybe you can improve your research, or you know what to do next. Then everything is completed, you compile everything into an article, right? You write a journal article, then it goes to a edited volumes. So now everything is online, people won't see actual books, but they are in an actual journal. Then some of these data can go to textbooks, your undergraduate textbooks, or any kind of textbooks. If this data or the results mean something, it can go to textbooks, and these things become reference sources. Again, it goes to selecting a topic. So when you want to select a topic, the first thing you do is you go to internet and search about the things people have done on that area. So next we'll talk about this area, the reference sources, and how to get these. So I have categorized four resources. All of these are online websites. First one is PubMed. I think Dr. Pixie has gone through the PubMed. PubMed is free, and then comes Scopus, SciFinder, and Google Scholar. And how many of you have used either one of these? I think pretty much all of you have used these. So talk about one by one. Is Dr. Fitzky going through PubMed and how to search in there? No, I mean, okay. So let's go to PubMed, and this is actually funded by US government, and it's free, but most of the time articles are focused on biomedical research areas. So you go to PubMed, and this is the so you can search anything. So can anyone give me a topic that you like, then I can search it in here.
Tyrosinemia type 1.
I haven't heard that. Maybe I have to type that in Google first.
No.
Oh, yep. Yeah, so in here it gives all the results. So all the results of the journal articles published on this area, and here you can find clinical trials, reviews, and you can categorize that by going back to the last 5 years or 10 years, and there's a tab called species. And so from that you can get if this is related to humans or other animals. In here you can see the figures or the diagrams those articles have,
Then, if you go down, you can choose a database from here as well. There's books, genome, nucleotides. So you can choose the database as well. And the other thing is, if you want to just focus on review articles, you can just type review here. Then it will focus on all the review articles published on that topic. So it's very easy, and they have nice features as well. You can sort by most recent, best match, publication date, first author, last author, journal, or the title, and it gives a good bit of option to categorize your research. So then comes Scopus. So Scopus is a subscription-based citation service. So and MSU is a subscriber. I'm sure your university is also a subscriber. So you need to be in the campus Wi-Fi, or you need to install VPN to access Scopus. The best thing here is it has broad range of articles, not only focusing on biomedical stuff like PubMed. You can get organic, analytical, and all sort of research areas from Scopus. So let's go to Scopus for a minute and see what they are offering. Yeah, so we can type the same thing here. And hit enter. Yeah. So, but this is more organized than PubMed, at least for me, because in here you can see, you can choose which year it was published and go to that. So you can see in 2017, 12 papers have published on this topic, and 2016 it's 19. I think most papers was published in 2014. And if you go down, you can actually find out who published most papers on this topic. So this guy has published 27 research papers. So if you are interested on that guy and his work, you can always Google that name and go to his website and find out more. So it's a very important option in Scopus. And then you can choose the subject area. So most of them are most of the articles are related to medicine. Then comes biochemistry and genetics. So this also very useful to find out which to find out this topic falls in which area. Then comes document types. Again, there's actual journal articles, reviews, conference papers, letters. This could fall in letters, maybe authors writing something about the about this area, and book chapters. And there are some other categories too, like country. So United States has published 127 articles on this topic. Then comes United Kingdom, Canada. So for me, Scopus is very useful to find out if you want to categorize the research from year, or find out who is more prominent author in this area. And yeah, and if you want to edit this, you can click edit, and
go back and choose one of these, like author, first author, article title, or the other categories mentioned here. Then comes SciFinder. Have you guys used SciFinder? Okay. Yeah, and it's a very cool search engine for science, and I'll tell you, it can do a little bit more than PubMed and Scopus. It includes biochemistry topics and other topics as well. Mostly analytical people use SciFinder as well. But the thing is, you need to be, you need to register into SciFinder to use it. So I'm already logged on to the SciFinder. So like before, I mean, you can just type and search. But this is not the coolest thing SciFinder offers. I'll tell you how SciFinder can be used in other ways. So this is normally just a research as PubMed and Scopus. So you can see they have categorized the person who published more papers. And I think we saw this name in Scopus as well. Then you can refine your research search by author, company name, language, database, and blah blah blah. But the best thing is, think that you are working on some kind of a compound, molecule, or amino acid, and you need to find out who is studying about that specific molecule or amino acid or the DNA. So for that, we can go to this tab, chemical structure.
Chemical structure, and they give us a window to draw the molecule you want, and this is a very cool feature. So they have a pencil, eraser, and in here it shows atom. When you click it, it gives the whole periodic table, so you can choose any compound you want, click it, and go to the whiteboard. You have that compound, and then you have some short forms for like the chemical compounds we know: NH, NH2, ammonia, NO2, hydroxyl group. So you can click this, and you can make it OH. And then we have some kind of like variables: halogen, metal. If you don't know the metal exactly, so you can just put M. We went to that one. R groups, and this is for repeating groups. You don't have to draw it. All the time. You can just select the repeating group and just copy paste it. Then comes a very. First, let me close this. Yeah. Say something. Substituent percentage. Yeah, seems like I haven't used this option before. But anyway, you know what to do. So then there's some chains, a structure, templates. And this is a cool one too. And since we are talking about biochemistry stuff, there's amino acids. So you can find all the 25 amino acids, and you don't have to draw it. What you can do is just click it. I'm using lysine because I'm working with lysine. So you just have to click it, and then it will give you the structure. Then there's five nucleic acids as well, and this is a very cool feature. And then you can add the positive charge or the negative charge, and there's like very common atoms we need, a single bond, double bond, and things like that. So if you want to search on people or the research that based on lysine, what you have to do is just click OK here, and here you can find about just lysine or substructure means. If there's any modification to lysine, you can find about that as well. You can click OK and then press search. And my computer is very slow, and it is old as a fossil, so it may take some time. I'll have to search about that. Yeah. Have you guys used this option before in SciFinder? Perfect. So so these are all researchers people have done about lysine. So if you click it, you can go to that paper and you can read about it, and they have given some information on the bottom as well. And then we'll go back, and I'll show you some other things you can do. And think if you want to search about a reaction, right? So then you can choose this one, this reaction option, and then you can draw. Let me think. Yeah, we'll get benzene. And we can put reaction arrow. So this is the reactant, and we can put this as the product, and we can close this window. And I'm not sure this is happening, I'm not an organic chemist, but we can see if this research this reaction is happening. Oh, they say a reaction is too general. But you know what to do now, right? Do you have any question about this search or how to do that? And I think it's very clear, right? So if you want to search about structure or reaction, you can go and draw the reaction, draw the structure, and easily get the papers or the people who are working on that molecule or the reaction. Yeah, so then we'll talk about our next okay, how many of have you used Google? That is the first thing I do. Just type the whatever I want in Google and go to the Google Scholar. I mean, this is very helpful in few ways. I'll discuss about that in few minutes. The problem is, this is very useful, but the problem is it's not accurate as other three databases I talked about, because this is still in the developing stage, and I don't. I mean, they have added some features, but the options are fewer than the other three search engines we discussed. So we can go to Google Scholar. and type the same thing. Yeah, it gives all the related articles. So like the other databases, you can categorize it by year and by relevance or by date. And there are some cool features too. And it gives how many times this paper is cited, right? This citation count is valuable in a way that we can find that other people also pay interest in this paper. Then we can think this is a significant paper in this area. So we can go and read and get a lot of information. And then you can search related articles, and there are like 8 versions of this. And if you want to cite it, and I'm going to talk about later, so you can just cite, click cite, and it will give few options about the cite citation types. And if you want an EndNote copy, you can press this and go to EndNote as well. And I'm talking about that in a few minutes. And you can save it to my citations here, and you can use it as a library. Yeah, and I think we pretty much covered on literature databases. So do you have any questions up to this point? So then I have few tips for few tips when you are searching for scientific literature, and we'll go through one by one. First, if you want to search on a topic, it's good to start with a review, because as I said before, it contains a summary of that given field. It doesn't usually contain new experiments, but it could help you to understand what direction that field is going. Then comes science is a web. I talked about this with that cycle. So everyone is citing other people. So think that I'm publishing a paper. And if one of you have done something related to that area, I'm citing one of you, right? And if that person is writing something and my work is related, or somebody else's work is related, he is citing somebody else. So this is like a web. Somehow someone is citing other person in their work. I think we covered most of that. Then comes that citation count. So I showed that in the Google Scholar, some papers have thousands of citations, maybe 3,000, 4,000. That means people really care about that paper, and there's a lot of information which we can get from that paper. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean if you don't see a paper with low citations, you can't ignore it, or there's no important or valuable information in that paper. But like rule of thumb, if paper has more citation, that means it's important in that area. Oftentimes these citing articles are the articles which has higher citation numbers are review articles, so you may need to look for that as well. Look at the reference list. Okay, so it means this. So you go to you are reading a paper, and sometimes you don't need what they have mentioned, or you don't like that paper and it is not relating to your research area. But still, what they have referred in the back may be useful for your research. So even if you can't get much information from the paper, it's good to go through the
reference list and see whether they are important for your research or the topic. Don't be an age discriminate. When I started looking for literature first, I was skeptical of looking at old research which was published in the 1960s or 70s. But most of the time, the important work, important work in a field, was performed many years ago. I think you guys know PCR, right? And you have worked with PCR. And I think PCR was discovered in the 1980s. So it's maybe 20 odd years ago, but still you can go and read that paper, and it is still valuable.
So don't think about the year of the article that has been published, but try to get the important stuff from the paper. Then ask for help.
You shouldn't be hesitant to ask for help from your advisor, your colleagues, your friends, and we are a science community, right? So everyone is here to help. So you can talk to them, you can ask how can I find good papers, what are the good search engines, and how can we categorize these, and how can we use this in our research. So always it's good to ask help.
Then comes subscribe. And nowadays there's like thousands or 10,000 journals that present research articles, so you cannot caught up with all the websites, right? So it's easy to subscribe to those websites or the journal. Then they will update you when they publish new papers on that current area. So next few slides is on how to subscribe into these journals and websites. Okay, how many of have you seen this icon in websites?
Right, it's very famous, but we never use it, right? Have you guys used it before? I just ignored it. So it's called RSS feed, and it means really simple syndication. So it's an easy way to keep up with the website without having to constantly visit them. So if we subscribe into a website through RSS feed, it notifies us when they publish new articles.
Then I'll tell you how to manage this RSS feed using a website called Feedly. Anyone used Feedly before? Okay, so a few years ago this was a website, but now they have an app also in the Google App Store and in Apple as well. So I'll go to ACS Nano Journal first. I'm using ACS Nano because I'm working with nanoparticles. So this is my go-to research journal. Okay, so this is the ACS Nano website. First thing is you need to find the RSS feed icon. So on the top, I can't see the RSS feed, so I'll go down, down, down. Yeah, here it is. So this is the RSS feed link for ACS Nano Journal. So you can just click it. Then it will direct you to the website. So in here, they have given RSS feed links to all the journals that ACS published. Okay, so from this we have to find ACS Nano. So that's what I did. I clicked, and this is the ACS Nano RSS feed page. So we keep it like this. Then we open a new tab and we go to Feedly. So this is a free website. You can subscribe or log in to this by your Google. Yeah, let me find out. Yeah, get started for free. You can click this, and it you can log into this website through Google, or you can open an account in Feedly or through Facebook. I normally use my Google account, so it will ask for my password. Oh, it automatically logged in. Yeah, so ACS Nano I already have, so I'll choose a new website. So let me check. Yeah, ACS Chemical Biology. So we click the RSS feed page for ACS Chemical Biology. So next, what you have to do is just copy this link and go to Feedly, and there's a huge icon called add content, and you can press the sources icon and then just copy paste that link, and you don't have to do anything. It just automatically gives the RSS feed link for the ACS Chemical Biology, and you just have to click follow. And you can give a name, chemical bio, create collection. So in here you can see it gives the ACS Chemical Biology link, and when you go to that, it will load the 10 most recent publications from that journal. So from Feedly and RSS feed, you can categorize what you want to see, maybe every morning or every day, and you can keep up with the publications that you want to see and what you really care, because most probably we are reading because they are related to our research. So Feedly and RSS feed is a great way of organizing data and the papers. So do you guys have any questions on RSS feed and how to use Feedly? Want to go home? That's it. Yeah. So, I don't think we are taking much time. Okay. How many of you have heard about EndNote before? Do you have EndNote in your computer? Download. Okay. Perfect. So, you know. So this is you have to pay to download it, otherwise there's a 30-day trial as well, but most of the time universities are offering the subscription for EndNote, but you won't believe our MSU stopped the subscription a few months ago for EndNote. Anyway, this is, I mean, you know, we have to cite
refer papers when we are writing something, right? So, I mean, maybe when we are writing a report after field trip, we can just write without referring or citing any general articles. But now, since we are in the science field, when we are writing something, we have to cite or refer other articles, and we have to notify that in the article that we are writing.
So EndNote is a very useful software to categorize and maintain a database for the reference papers you want to cite, and I'll show I'll show EndNote here. So if you are working on a project, what you can do is you can go to a file, you can click new, so can you give me any kind of research areas you guys are working on?
Hunting disease.
Sorry?
Huntington's disease.
Huntington's disease, okay. Is the spelling correct for Huntington? I don't think so. Okay. Yeah, so you can type Huntington and just save. Yeah, so you can see on the top, it opened a new library for that particular research or the field that you are working on. Then you can get all the papers related to that area. So first, we'll talk about first creating a library. We did that. Then manual data entry. This is a very painstaking thing, but I'll just show you how to do that. So think that you have a paper, and think that if you have a paper downloaded and you import that into EndNote, but now you have to enter all the good things about that paper. So actually you can manually enter all those things here. Author, I'll just put my name 2017, title, blah blah blah. So you see, this is like very it takes a lot of time and it is very unnecessary. Like, you don't have to do this. There's easy ways to do this using EndNote, but I was just saying, if you need to do this, there's a way too. Yeah, then we can close this tab. Yeah, manual data entry we covered. And again, EndNote also provides a search engine that you can search for papers online. So for that, you can go to tools and press search library, and it comes here, and you can type this one here and just type search. So you need and from here you need to select any field contains contains this topic, and press search. Oh. Oh, my bad. Go, yeah, online search. Yes. So you can choose any of the journals from here, and it gives a like wide variety of journals from everywhere. So, but the most famous one is PubMed. So we'll go to PubMed, and yeah, connecting to PubMed, and then we can just search. So it is getting close to 1,000 research articles, which includes this word from the PubMed. And if you press OK, and I'm not going to press OK because my computer is very slow. If it is getting all these 1,000 articles, it may take at least half an hour. So if you click OK, it will get all the 1,000 papers into its database. Okay, simple as that. It's a very powerful tool if you want to get all the papers from that journal. But mostly we don't we are not doing that. We are just selecting one article by time. So then I'll went through this. Then comes exporting citations from other paper. So again, I'll tell you how to export citation from a website. Yeah, so we'll go to ACS Nano, and I'll ACS Nano publication website, and I'll choose the first paper, super molecular poly. Okay, think that this paper you need to cite on your journal article. So what you are going to do is find the place which says download citation. Okay, and in different journals this come in different places, so you may need to spend few seconds to find this link. And what you can do is press download, press download, and it will direct you to a page like this. So it says format RIS, EndNote is our preferred software, so we are choosing this, and which includes citation for the content below, means this. If you want you can download citation and the reference list, and as a third option it can give you the abstract as well. For now I will just download the citation. So when you click this, it will ask to open EndNote, so you just have to click it. Then it will automatically open in EndNote. So it's importing. Yeah, so it's here in it's in your Huntington library. So this is the paper you want. Then there are some cool features as well. So if you want to categorize this more, you can go to groups and create a group. So you can type polymer, and you can just drag and drop the paper into this subcategory. So think that in all references you have like 100 papers, but you can categorize it through these groups. And there's another cool feature called create a smart group. So what SMART group does is, so you can name this again, we'll just call it bootcamp. And if your title has any kind of, you can drag the papers by author's name, year, or any other thing. I'll just put a title here and put polymer and create. So you can see in bootcamp folder, it automatically adds this paper because it contains the word polymer. Okay, so you can be smart about it. So if you want to create a group for a certain person or a certain topic, you don't have to do it manually. You can just give a keyword in this smart group here, and it automatically gets the reference to that group. Okay, so now we imported the reference to EndNote, and now we'll see how we are going to add that into our Word document. Have you done this before, adding the EndNote reference to the document? Okay. Yeah. So it comes here. So yeah, you can write something like biochemistry is life, and think you need to put that reference to this sentence. Okay, so, and the cool feature of EndNote is when you install EndNote, the Word will give you a EndNote ribbon in the Word. So when you go there, there's like insert citation, yeah, and you can directly go to EndNote by clicking this. You can edit and manage, edit the library, and here you can actually choose what kind of a style you need for your citation. So normally we use ACS citation style, so we keep it like that. So this option is called cite while you write. This is how you are going to do that. So you go to the EndNote and you click the paper you want to cite, and then you go back to the Word document, and this is the place you want to add the citation. You go to insert citation, click it, and click insert selected citation, and then it will automatically add the citation onto the Word document. And this is the ACS style. If you want to change it, you can go to the style tab and change it the way you like. See, now it gave a different style. You can use the numbered and compact version. And there's a popular one is called Vancouver. Yeah, so according to that, I mean according to your preference, and the according to the preference of your journal that you need to publish, you can change this as well. So I mean I think we covered most of the things, I mean most of the basic things about how to use EndNote. Do you guys have any questions regarding this? All good? Okay. So, I mean, with that we came to end of this lecture. And when you use EndNote, you will get used to that, and it is pretty easy when you are writing a paper. So, I think you need to fill this survey. Do you guys have it already? Okay. So you can give it to me.